Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, Deborah.
Now, what is happening with the share market when the rest of the economy seems to have lost its feet?
Well, I guess when you're down almost 50%, it's the bargain basement sale of the century, isn't it? So, I mean, even the US market is up about 18% from its record lows, and we've risen by a similar level. But I must admit, I was surprised to see it rocketing by 5% yesterday, and I actually sold $1,500 worth of shares yesterday because I'm sort of a bit pessimistic. I think it was a buy below 4,000, but it's such a massive global economic slowdown that you just can't be sure that with this, you know, the world's biggest margin call unfolding, that it won't go plunging again. And clearly, there's a bit of optimism around the rate cuts that will come, and we still do have the second highest interest rates in the Western world after New Zealand. So there's a lot of room to move, and I think, you know, the investors are looking at interest rates of maybe 3-4% in a year's time, and saying, well, with the money in the bank earning so little, you may as well pick up some of the bargain basement buyers of the century on the stock market.
Well, it's interesting also to see interest rates in Japan, for example, being cut again, and they're down to about 0.25%. One of the things that's led to the stock market meltdown has been this thing called the unravelling of the carry trade, where people borrow money in Japan and spend it in Australia at these incredibly advantageous rates. When the Japanese central bank drops its rates by that much, it's down to almost next to nothing. Do you run the risk of the carry trade starting up again?
Well, it could, but our rates are coming down pretty fast as well. Like, if they, you know, it'll be 1.75 percentage points in 3 months if they do a 50 basis point cut today. So, and the carry trade's been unravelling. I mean, the biggest reason that the Aussie dollar's gone from 98 cents US to 68 cents US in the last 3-4 months has been that particularly the American and Japanese investors are just taking their money home. It's just a flight home. And so I think what you're going to see is just because our dollar has recovered a little bit to 68 cents, it's not sort of wallowing around 60 cents, there is a bit more room to move for the Reserve Bank to cut interest rates without fears that the currency will completely fall out of bed. And if it does completely fall out of bed, well, then you might see a bit more opportunistic carry trades going on, where a Japanese investor might say, hey, I can buy into an iron ore company or a big gas supplier to Japan for, you know, 80% less than it was a year ago, particularly because of the currency. So and we are seeing a little bit of opportunistic purchasing being done by foreign investors, like the government of Singapore is bailing out GPT, the biggest owner of shopping centres, of office towers in Australia. They're also buying into Mirvac, which is a troubled property company, which is shares are suspended as they desperately try and raise $400 million. So you will see these opportunistic moves coming into the market.
Do you think that, well, exactly who is buying? I mean, you said you were a seller yesterday. Who's buying?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing in Australia's favour, we've got a few problems in Australia with our $1 trillion of household debt and our $60 billion current account debt and our $620 billion foreign debt. But the biggest thing we've got in our favour is the $1 trillion of super. And I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, the super funds who have been hoarding cash, particularly for the last 3 or 4 or 5 months during this crisis. They are the most cashed up players in the market, and I think they're buying. And wealthy individuals, like people say that during recessions, assets return to their rightful owners. So even if you just look at, say, the media scene, the two biggest players that have actually got plenty of cash that are left standing really these days is the Murdoch and the Packer families, who have very little debt on their personal holdings. And you're seeing private equity and Channel 10 and Channel 9 and even Fairfax are sort of struggling with too much debt. Tony O'Reilly selling out, and assets are just being sold. And there are some people left with cash, a lot of wealthy individuals, super funds, and the Singapore government, and even a few private equity firms like the world's biggest private equity firm, TPG out of Texas, is in there swooping at the moment, making very lowball offers to buy into Asciano, which is the owner of Pacific Rail, our biggest rail business, and the Patrick Stevedoring business, which has a duopoly on the wharves. So at prices, you know, where Asciano's fallen from $11 to $2, someone then comes along at some point and says, you've actually got pretty good assets there, and the currency's crashed. We reckon from Texas, you're looking pretty cheap, and we'll offer you $1 billion at a high rate of interest to give us a big slice of your business.
Oh, I love those Texans and their great big hats. Maybe they'll ride in and save the media sector. It looks like, as you listed there, 10, 9, 7, APN and Fairfax, all struggling with various degrees of debt. Why is this sector being hit so hard?
Well, I guess the media sector, it often attracts moguls. There's more family-owned media companies than any other sector. It's just an industry which lends itself to prestige, maybe even vanity purchases. And we've also seen private equity firms just go over the top and paying $5 billion for PBL Media, Channel 9 and ACP was just a ridiculous price that CVC Asia Pacific paid. Equally, KKR, the world's most famous private equity firm, paid a massive price to buy 50% of Channel 7. And the Asper family of Canada have made a fortune over the years. They bought control of Channel 10 for about $300 million back in 1992 in a Malcolm Turnbull brokered deal. And they've made a fortune out of Channel 10, but they've also done silly things like borrowed billions to buy all of Conrad Black's empire in Canada. And suddenly they're sitting today going, oh my goodness, we've got too much debt, there's a global credit crisis, what can we sell? And that's why a lot of people view Channel 10 as being on the market at the moment. And the same story with Tony O'Reilly, one of the five or six most famous global media moguls, sort of often wanted to buy into Fairfax, runs the Independent out of London, big player in South Africa. He suddenly got too much debt, and in a fire sale, he's just come out yesterday and said, I'm selling my 40% stake in APN News and Media, and that's WSFM, the Mix and the Gold radio networks. It's the big provincial newspapers, particularly in Queensland and regional New South Wales, and the big outdoor advertising business. Bang, it's going to change hands, and someone's going to buy it, maybe Kerry Stokes.
Now, will they buy it at the bottom of the market?
Well, two private equity firms teamed up with Tony O'Reilly back before he had a debt problem last year and offered $6.10 a share. And now it's on the block, reputedly with a price of $4, although the stock yesterday was still wallowing around $2.98. That was after a 23% rise. So clearly, like every other company on the market, it had been smashed by more than 50%. And the media sector is particularly vulnerable because one of the first things that people cut in a shock economic downturn, which is what we're seeing, is advertising. I mean, you can easily cut your advertising. So the figures we saw yesterday on newspaper advertising in Australia were showing that it's fallen by more than 20%. And over the last 3 months, it's down almost by a third. I mean, these are massive drops in advertising revenue, and that's why the News Corporation share price is down 60% from the peak. And if you're suddenly making losses, and particularly if you're holding lots of newspaper assets, and the market's view of newspapers is that they're a dying industry, that everything's migrating to the web, they've got all these huge printing presses and expensive distribution systems, and who'd buy a newspaper at the moment? And APN's out there trying to sell a whole vast range of newspapers, and people just say, well, goodness, pretty hard thing selling that in the middle of a debt crisis.
It's, it's a tragedy, really, to see this happen, and there are lots of people who've already lost their jobs from newspapers. It looks like an industry that is very badly managed for the times that it's in.
Well, I don't know if it's badly managed. I just think it's the reality of what's happening. That I'm going to the SEEK annual meeting on Thursday in Melbourne. James Packer's the chairman. He's made about $400 or $500 million buying into that. They've just totally cut Fairfax's lunch. So they've just stolen a lot of their classified advertising clients in the jobs market. And I'll be going to the Fairfax AGM a week later in Melbourne. And they're sitting there with $2.5 billion of debt, and share price has gone from sort of $6 to briefly under $2 in the last few days. And the Fairfax family, John B. Fairfax, is sitting there with depends on who you believe, but $400 million margin loan on his 14% stake in the company. And around the world at the moment, O'Reilly has been forced to sell. Sumner Redstone, who's probably the most famous media mogul after Murdoch, he's been margin called out of his stake in Viacom, which is one of the big media conglomerates. So we're seeing empires fall before our very eyes through this global credit crunch. It's happening. I mean, half of the Russian billionaires have been wiped out, have been forced by their bankers to sell all these assets at fire sale prices. So it's just a question of who's got the debt. And if you've got too much debt, doesn't matter how long you've been a legend for, you can suddenly lose a lot, as we've seen with the likes of Tony O'Reilly and even some of the rest. Well, not a lot, but just lose your trophy assets.
It's an amazing time to be a financial commentator. Stephen Mayne is the founder of crikey.com.au and shareholder activist. It's like a race call, basically. He's in front, no, he's behind, no, he's fallen over, no, I'm afraid he's dead. You know, it's that sort of... it's just devastating, really. Now, we've got to look at... I can't resist Eddie Groves and ABC Learning Centres. There's another peacock to feather duster.
Well, who would have thought you could lose $3 billion providing massively subsidised childcare services to Australians? But that looks like what's happened. Eddie did the big tell-all interview on the front page of the Australian Financial Review on Saturday. It was a fascinating read. And, the shares have been suspended for 2 months. There's been all sorts of related party transactions going on. Eddie's now being sued by his former wife for $40 million. The accounts have been delayed for 2 months. The stock's been suspended at 54 cents. The latest accounts claim they're worth $2.4 billion. The market cap's currently $300 million, so they've clearly got another couple of billion dollars to write off there to get anywhere near what the market thinks. And, Eddie's just going to go down as being like John Spalvin's and Robert Holmes' court, the buccaneers who rose up during the debt binge. We had our debt binge in the 1980s after Paul Keating deregulated foreign banking. They all borrowed too much. They all collapsed, and we all remember them now. And Eddie Groves will go down as one of those.
But there's something also unique about Eddie, though. I've read those interviews with him, and he thinks everybody's just been terribly mean to him.
Yeah,
including his wife, including his ex-wife. It's quite hilarious, the lack of insight that these people have into their own sort of dire problems.
Well, that's right. He's just completely in denial. He just has no idea that... he ran the thing like it's a... he was a dominant player. The chief financial officer was his old personal accountant. He had a sort of a franchise model, but at the end of the day, the franchise was sort of ABC Learning itself. His brother-in-law, Frank Zullo, did most of the developments. Another old mate, Donald Jones, an ex-army guy, had the 10-year exclusive contract to provide all of the agency staff to ABC Learning, and then that was going to be bought back for $70 million, and now the new CEO's just cancelled that contract. So it's just an absolute governance schmozzle at ABC Learning, and it's been a management fiasco, and how you can lose $3 billion with this is just a scandal. And the fact that Eddie can come out and say, what me? Everyone else is being mean to me, and it's just ridiculous. He's just in denial.
Now, you've also lined up many annual general meetings that you'll be attending in the next few weeks, and obviously you've been to a few already. How has the tone changed in those meetings in recent times with regard to executive pay?
Well, I've never seen anything like it. The last 2 weeks in particular has been just incredible. We saw Valad Property Group have a 76% against vote on its remuneration report. The company's almost broke and the founders are still making millions, so it's ridiculous. Transurban, $7 billion toll road company, controls most of the toll roads up here in Sydney. It had a 58% vote against its remuneration report, and shareholders were rightly annoyed that the last CEO walked out with a $15 million farewell. It was ridiculous. And they're very upset that the chairman of ABC Learning is still the chairman of Transurban. So this guy, David Ryan, who chaired the ABC Learning Audit Committee for the last few years, he got a 34% no vote, which is the biggest no vote that any incumbent ASX 100 chairman has ever got. Even last week at Toll Holdings, a 43% against vote on the remuneration report. And the shareholders are rightly outraged that when they demerged this Asciano business, they showered the executives with $55 million worth of buyouts of their options, assuming a share price of between $30 and $40. And the combined Toll Asciano share price is today $8. So there's a lot of greed and outrageous lurks going on. And the shareholders at the moment are basically saying, we're not going to take it anymore.
Now, are these votes binding?
Well, they're not binding, but you are seeing... The thing that is binding is director elections. And you've seen a couple of specific resolutions on executive pay. There was one at Biota last week where it got voted down, an options deal for the CEO. And, even John Alexander, who's long been James Packer's understudy in PBL, he got a $15 million payout when James Packer demerged his casino and media operations. And if you strip out the Packer stake in Crown, the big casino business, he had 50% of the shares voted against him last Tuesday at the AGM in Melbourne. So clearly, the shareholders are starting to vote against directors and they're starting to vote against remuneration reports. And I think this is absolutely appropriate. For too long, we've just had the 99% brigade sitting on boards, always getting re-elected with 99% in favour. And we've just had ridiculous payouts to executives, and clearly it's going to stop. The Boral remuneration report last week got 58% against because the shareholders said the share price is tanking, you've given us a profit warning, why has the CEO's pay gone from $4.8 million to close to $6 million? And a big increase in his short-term bonus when we've all taken a haircut.
All right, now, Stephen, there's one way to make a quid, an extra quid, if you're lucky on Cup Day. Do you want to pick one out of the hat?
Well, I'd love to see the first ever female jockey get up. So Claire Lindop on Moatees for Bart Cummings' 12th Cup winner. But I must admit, just for the sake of the name, given the madness in the markets, I do like Mad Rush.
All right, come on, there's an omen bet there. Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thanks, Deborah.
Stephen Main is the founder of crikey.com.au and a shareholder activist. Time now for the news headlines with John Logan.